is essential. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Welcome to Pirate Block Radio. You're tuned into CKUT 90.3 FM. If you are just even the slightest interested in digital art practices, new media art, and other experimental fields in a variety of mediums, then you have come to the right place. Speaking to you is me, your host, Malte Leander, leading this show out of Jejage, also known as Montreal, located on unceded indigenous lands. You are today having the pleasure of following along for the kickoff for this brand new fall season of the show, once a month for the next while. We have quite the fully packed episode for you today, so I think we'll get to it straight away by listening to my conversation with today's guest, Amanda Gutierrez. So, for this first episode of this season of Pirate Block Radio, we are starting off with a relatively recent Montreal-based sound and media artist exploring acoustic ecology and sound walking, mixed with new practices such as virtual and augmented reality, often around social indifferences and structures, experience and history through a feminist lens. Amanda Gutierrez, welcome to Pirate Block Radio.
Thank you so much for this invitation.
I'm happy to have you on. So perhaps starting off with a general sense for the curious that don't know about these practices that you are active in, or perhaps that vaguely knows about the terms but not fully understanding what it is about, maybe I can start off by asking if you can elaborate a bit around your practice or around acoustic ecology and sound walking that you're focusing on.
Yes, thank you. My work is an interdisciplinary, or is based on interdisciplinary practice of sound studies, and also the walking practice as a main tool of not only exploration, but also research creation. So acoustic ecology, or the sound aspect of my work, or the sound studies aspect of the work, it's connected to the field of acoustic ecology, which is a field that is recently new. It started in the 70s and actually started in Canada, so in the West Coast, specifically in the Simon Fraser University. And academically speaking, it was made as part of a group of researchers, and it's Murray Schiffer and another collaborator of his that I'm very, very close to in terms of the academic practice, but also I really admire how she has developed the idea of the sound walk, and she is Heidegger Westerkamp. So Heidegger Westerkamp still sound walking and leading sound walks, but it has a very important field of work, and not only related on to sound walks, but also on music composition and composition with the public space, which is very interesting. Also, how she uses the soundscape, the idea of the soundscape as part of that, and that's where my work also is connected to. So not only recording, but also those recordings creating an extension through different forms and connections with the idea of the public space, and how we can create participatory walks where we can be aware of social and political implications of the soundscape, not only the natural relations between non-humans and humans, but also within the social and political connections in the space.
What sort of tools can one use, or how does one approach, say, political statements or more important social matters, only based on audio? Is that a form of guidance, or how can one approach these matters through the medium?
I think for me, the sound walk itself is a practice that implies the embodiment. And when you mean, and when you are asking the spectators that are attending with you to the sound walk to pay attention to their environment, you're activating also the other senses, not only sound, but also the sense of smell, the sense of the tactile sense. But we have to consider that these tools are, it can be also ableist, right? Because it's like, who can access the public space, and how we access the public space? That's a very important question that also I am even like questioning at this moment. So now, not only is the sense of hearing when you are sound walking, as I say, it's activated, but also your own positionality, your own position as an individual. So that plays a role of who you are, such as gender, such as race, such as class, in all the living experiences that you have in within the public space. So to me, it's important to have a field recorder if you want, but when it comes to collective walks or group walks, to me it's more important just to pay attention, walk, and then in the end, have a conversation with all the group. Sometimes I use a lot of drawings that create a space of reflection, and those pedagogical tools are really important to approach the sound walk as I said, not only a research tool, but also a collective space for reflection and in the reflection within where we are and how we navigate the space, and especially for in this case, because as you might know, sound walking, the practice of sound walking has been inherited and has been kind of like considering mostly from the Western perspective, very also masculine perspective with the idea of the flaneur. So I'm trying to attempt to take and consider what happens when we also consider these observations, these tools, and we understand the positionality of people of color, women, non-binary, transgender, in queer communities, who are the most of the time, you know, not considered. Their subjectivities have been always kind of in the margin. So to me, that's very important to create this sense of do we listen and walk in the same, you know, with the, not in the same, but we do walk in the same, but do we perceive the same, where some people have more access to the public space, more access to also safe places, more access to nature or ecologically not damaged spaces, right? Mm-hmm. And those questions are crucial. And that's why I use the sound walk as a tool of collective reflection and critical thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a really interesting and important point of the different individuals and their relationship to the public space, and also on the other side, other things that affect the experience itself of the different forms of listening or the intention whilst listening and walking, but also history and architecture of the specific place and memory, which I know that you reflect a lot upon as well.
Yes, and that's very important, because some of the sound walks that I've been attending, they happen most of the time for example, in public parks or in sanctuaries, right? In public parks that are natural reserves, which is great, right? But also we have, to me and my walks, are more interested in walking in liminal spaces of the industrial side, the side where segregation, it's all evident, the sites where not accessible spaces are being constructed and logistically made to exactly segregate, to divide a city in different forms and ways. So this is very important to me, to in my practice, and that's something that also McCarthy, which she used to be a professor and academic here in Montreal, specifically in Concordia, she mentioned as the ecotone, right? The ecotone, this is the soundscapes that also have a space of contradiction, space of resonance, which is very important because those spaces are obviously visible perhaps, but audible. They're audible in a very strong way. So how? Just through freeways, highways, through decibels that are extremely loud, and there are sound pollutions that are hurting our ears and also other parts of our bodies that sometimes we don't realize that they're specifically in marginalized communities. And it's important that the sound walk also serves as a form of approaching those observations or listening observations.
Mm-hmm. Well, to have a better dive into one of these sound walks, we'll be listening to an excerpt that Amanda has recorded throughout one of her sound walks here in Montreal, actually in Little Burgundy area around the Atwater Market. So you are listening to Pirate Block Radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we are about to dive a little deeper into the practice of today's guest, Amanda Gutierrez, with me here today. Amanda, a project of yours that I find very interesting is one called Flaneuse, La Caminanta, which is a virtual reality experience documenting sound walks of female participants in the public space. This is then done and documented through different cities such as Mexico City, Abu Dhabi, and New York City. What is it about this meeting between augmented reality and sound walks that sparks your interest?
So as I mentioned before, political listening during the sound walk is very crucial in my work. And I want to say that one of the most important experiences that shaped that interest, but also this critical thinking, is the impossibility of me as a woman, since I was probably 12, 15 years old, and I start walking alone in the streets in Mexico City, was the fear that I always have of transiting the space as such, because there is a lot of catcalling, harassment. There is also always the fear of being raped, of being attacked. So in that impossibility, raise a lot of questions of how the city is shaped, who is shaping the city, who is creating the city, and why women, transgender, non-binary, queer, and people of color have always been walking with fear. They have been always walking in this spheres of kind of like inaccessibility. So I developed La Caminanta with a 360 camera, walking in basically from the idea of psychogeography. So that might be also, I like that contradiction. Why is a contradiction? Because psychogeography is coming from the Situacionist and the Situacionist International, which, yeah, they did have very radical ideas about critical urbanism. But they were all male, and most of the time, extremely machist or sexist, because there were women, but they were women only assigned in a certain task. So I'm not alone in this question. There is also other scholars that are arising these questions, like, so can we use psychogeography, not from that inherent kind of like point of like very male dominated point of view, but also can we use them, these tools, as a critical thinking? So that's what I did, right? I used the drift, the idea of drifting in the city, getting lost in the city with other women, in this case, La Flanesa, La Caminanta. Yes, there were like most of them, all of them women. And then we were walking from their own home to a route that they selected. And through the route, we were reflecting upon like a psychogeography on how the city creates certain aspects that like model, or certain aspects that are affecting us in the everyday life. And most importantly, in certain times during the day, right? So the night is like the place that is very inaccessible for us. And it's also a place that there is a total different life, right? And that to me was very crucial, and is still is a crucial question to explore for the next project. However, technology is also one of these allies. So the XR, VR, and AR technologies are extremely male dominated. And in this case, I find that it's very similar to the inaccessible spaces of the night street, or spaces where women can transit, but still is still a very difficult space to intersect. And one of the ideas that I have with La Caminanta is how we can depict ourselves as women without the male gaze, without someone filming us, but ourselves filming each other. And most importantly, the dialogue is coming from nonfiction techniques, which is documentary practices. And then this time, kind of like arriving to the point of how we can manage psychogeography within a film or with a film tool, which is a 360 camera, where you can look around, right? It was challenging, but in the end, these walks were meant to be shown with self-stand VR glasses in conferences, also in meetings and symposiums, in also festivals, where after that we actually do a walk. And then after that walk, we reflect upon these other cities, the city that we walk, and then how we as participants in this walk reflect upon gender and the space, the public space. So that was La Caminata. Well, La Caminata, Le Flaneuse. Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like an impactful combination too of combining the virtual reality experience of the glasses and then followed by an actual physical walk, having this experience fresh in mind. Sounds like an interesting clash and combination of experiences for these participants to perhaps start the reflection even more than one does in their everyday life as a male participant, perhaps mostly that are not subjected to as much to these sort of street-based harassments or targeted experiences that non-male individuals are more prone to experience.
Yes, and actually we have several users that participated, right, with the VR. I have to say that the VR seems, after I developed this project and then the pandemic came, so it was very difficult actually to further develop that, because the interface writes very close to your nose and it's very difficult to actually share. That was, for one hand, the one of the ideas or one of the main reasons why I stopped doing VR. But another reason is that technologies are also very elitist. And the VR technology, I have to say that as much as powerful and impactful it was for the people and viewers that were able to see it, also is not easy accessible for the most of the audiences. So even though if you use Google Cardboard, it's still being, a technology that requires certain steps upon this process in spaces where you can see it. So it's not accessible. And also it is going to have certain kind of elitism of who can buy one of these glasses that still be very expensive and who has all the other resources to actually experience that. And that's why I critically engage the VR virtual reality, but also I trying to find another alternative, which is augmented reality as a response of virtual reality.
Right. Apart from this project, you have others that also falls under the categories of sonic activism and focusing on this intersectional feminism through different angles. Another recent work of yours is titled Paper Noise, which is in collaboration with Collage Féministe Montréal, as well as with a soundtrack produced by #Vivas, a sound collective working with audio of field recordings of feminist political marches in Latin America. Can you elaborate a little bit about this project or how that came about as well?
So this project was part of the SBC Contemporary Art Gallery here in Montreal. And that was an arts residency that opened up. And it was during the pandemic. So actually it was very interesting for me to change my methodologies, because collectivity during the pandemic has been very challenged and also has been in a way tested, right? Like how we can create collectivity in a safe way through the COVID situation, where we have to stay in our own homes or in our own spaces without losing that space of thinking with, right? Thinking in groups, thinking and discussing. So fortunately, the gallery is big enough and it was a residency. So I could use the gallery as a studio, and I extended the gallery not for a personal studio, but as a feminist maker space, where actually Collage Feministes Montreal went and actually made some of the phrases and the letters in there to create the actions in the public space. Inviting them to come to the space and create together the phrases, because it's big enough to actually keep distance, was one of the most interesting processes because, one, we reflect together why we were doing the phrases. Second of all, which it doesn't happen usually, the phrases for it, during this process, each person makes the phrases, but never meet together in a space to actually paint the letters in one single space. Second of all, they allow me to film them, which is extremely rare because you have to save the anonymity. Because as we know, unfortunately, and also not really, I don't even understand why it's illegal to do with pasting because it's not permanent in the public space. However, this is a not legal activity. But I will not say it's not legal. I will just say I think the society and sometimes these spaces of permission are really, really strange and are really tied up with certain politics of what to say and what not to say. So we have all these conversations while we were doing that. We have also the opportunity to create this small video. And I invited Vivas to make the soundtrack because they do also collage, but they do collage with sound. And the collaboration, it takes place in the streets through sound field recordings, which later on they're edited together and put together in that form. So to me, paper noise is reflection of two parallel processes and methodologies of creating collage from a feminist perspective, from a feminist methodology, but most importantly, from and within the public space as one of the main, expressions mm-hmm. to develop all this links between the mediums.
I think that this sounds like an not only an interesting final result, but also the way of getting there, reflecting upon the collage and every step of the way of the way that you approach this residency of inviting the Collège Féministe to be part of the process of producing the work and then being part of the final video work as well.
Yeah, and paper noise also opened up a space to create a collaborative map where we were walking and tracing collages that we found. And then we took the pictures and we create manually a map with strings, which that attracted also the other collective that also is active in Montreal, which is Collage Féminicides Montreal. And in both, we have a dialogue because they are two collectives that they are in solidarity with each other. But, you know, the city is so vast and also the political initiatives are also so vast and powerful that it's okay having two collectives that are focused in the same goal. And so both collectives attended to the exhibition, have this, and I think embrace it in a way. I think in a way there was a relationship of authorship, which I'm always interrogating, like when authorship, when it's a collaboration, what is the limit? Is there a limit? There is liminal spaces. And those liminal spaces are the most interesting because then there is where they exist tensions. They exist also many new ideas that create other interrogations. And most importantly, they create other forms of enunciation. And to me, that was the paper noise, like how you can approach the space and how you can open up enough and trust in the people who enter the space that the next iteration, because every week the gallery changed its arrangement and it was changed based on the collaboration that took place over the week. And the last week was Women Walk the Walk, Women's Walk the Walk. And with them also, we create a new video. So I basically invited like different collectives, three different collectives, and each collective have their own approach to the space. And SBC Gallery was open enough and trustful enough to let us, you know, iterate the space in all these different forms, which I think is kind of like very cutting edge for a city as Montreal. And then in the last iteration, the Paper Noise Open Up also have a live concert, a live component, where we showed a composition that is called Paper Piece by one of the artists, the Fluxus artist, that Peter Patterson, which was the only Black artist, Fluxus Black artist. And to me, it was important to mention and to honor also the idea of sound as a political tool and sound as a collaborative way of embracing other people within this open gallery. And it was very important because it was in the middle of the pandemic. So I think for the people who attended, for the people who were able to use the space, was kind of like a breathe, you know, like a space for liberation a little bit, right? Because it was during the moments of the most, you know, like tiring moments of the pandemic.
Well, it sounds like an impressive amount of collaboration and and technicalities of making those layers or parameters work together. And as you mentioned, specifically in a time like we're in currently, to involve that many people from different organizations and with you know, a common goal, but still spread out, sounds like an interesting and successful project as well, the way that you describe it. But before going further with our discussions today, we are to listen to another excerpt of Amanda's work. Here is Shadow Walks at Home in Abu Dhabi, a part of Viv Coringham's series of the same name.
I'm walking in the desert, in the Gulf Desert in Abu Dhabi, in island that is called Sadiat. Around me there is only sand, in a very modernist looking campus. My walks in here are, besides being lonely, are full of wonder, like, and hope, because it's the only time in the day that I can go out. There's no one besides me. I don't think people find really healthy walking and running on these places, and specifically walking in this tunnel. With this other microphone, you can hear perhaps better the acoustics of this space, the magic of the echo. I mean, not, I don't want to say magic, but the power of this reverberance, the reverberance of this place. And the most interesting thing here while walking alone as a woman is that I don't feel unsafe. There is no crime. There is no man. There is only birds. And there is a body of water in the end of the tunnel. I can hear sometimes the breeze. I brought my students several times here to have experiments of sound. And so far, I can say that to me, this is a safe place. If I can describe
a sanctuary in the desert, this is a sanctuary for the students who wants to escape out of the cameras, out of the surveillance, to express their thoughts and their emotions on the walls, to the birds who are looking for a shelter with water, toxic water, of course, but water at least. This is a place. I think as much as I miss walking in Brooklyn or in Manhattan, I don't think I will never feel the safetiness that I feel in here and the loneliness of this raw underpass. And company of all these birds that live in this urban decay. I think this is a walk that I will miss once I leave this country and once I leave this island. I don't miss it yet, but I think it's memorable.
Welcome back here to Pirate Block Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. I am today talking to sound artist Amanda Gutierrez. We have had time to cover a bit on her practice, a bit more generally on acoustic ecology and sound walking, but now we'll stir the pot slightly by inviting a few other guests into today's conversation. First up is NYC-based experimental sound and media artist Jen Grossman. Happy to have you on board, Jen. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So the two of you have been working together just recently now with the project Sounding Arches Through WISE, Women Innovating Sound Experience in New York City, happening just a while ago. Can you perhaps elaborate a little bit upon what this project was about?
Sure. So Amanda and I have been collaborating for a bit of time over the years. We met at a conference called Women in Sound, Women on Sound in the Lancaster, UK. And since then, I believe that was 2016, we've collaborated on works concerning acoustic ecology and sonic territories. And I think this project was a transition into rethinking both the technology and the arrangement and the experience of experiencing acoustic territories. And Amanda's been working a bit more with Audio AR and the Echoes app to create geolocative, site-responsive projects. And so I was very interested in this technology and I've been very interested in sound walks. My practice tends to be a bit more experimental music, sound art, installation, sounding objects, and that type of thing. So I was interested in the site-specific element because some of my work takes place in public space. And so I thought this would be an interesting segue to learn the AR technology and then different ways to apply it in a spatial way, because I'm also interested in spatial placement of sound, spatial diffusion, and soundscapes as well. And so we long distance kind of planned this project with a group that I've been organizing under called WISE, and it's women working in experimental media arts and technology. And each event kind of takes a whole different arrangement. Like some are performance events, some have been a combo of artist talks and presentations. And some are like this, more in the field and more public engaged. So we plan the project, we use the app and geolocated all of these sounds that we received a number of submissions for. It was the call was for World Listening Day, and we received a number of sounds around the world from around the world, and mapped them into various archways, waterfalls, different landmarks in the park, of Prospect Park in Brooklyn. And the idea was to sort of encounter and happen upon these acoustic territories and have them triggered as people encountered them in the public park. So there was also a group element and a participatory element of people arriving and navigating these geolocative soundscapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like a good joining of your two different backgrounds into a lucrative or interesting direction then. So if I understand it correctly, you're sort of activating the space that you're walking in with other compositions. What is it that is interesting in sort of filling acoustical or physical space through compositions in this way?
Well, there's sort of two perspectives I think of it from, and one is sort of from a sound design element, but sound designing for space in a way, and a physical interaction with sound. And another is the sort of unexpected happenstance or synchronicities that can happen when sounds just line up with the sort of acoustic environment that already exists. So I found those moments to be really surprising and interesting, and how certain either musical, like for example, we had a piece under a tree, a violin string piece, and the way that worked in that environment was very specific. Similarly to like some of the sounds in the waterfalls, some of the watery soundscapes, and we had some insect soundscapes that were sort of playing near the bushes. And so those moments where it almost felt like it was planted there intentionally, but kind of like a little bit off. And that's sort of the experience that I like about AR is it's playing a bit with your perception, your concept of reality, and it's slightly disorienting.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear what can be said perhaps about these communal or group-based sound walks and perhaps how collaboration comes into play. I mean, collaboration both between you, Jen, and Amanda, but also the sort of collaboration that is created when experiencing such a thing in a group, as opposed to doing that type of walk or physical occupation as a single individual.
Let's see. Well, in terms of the participatory element, I mean, there's certainly a completely different experience testing as a single person. And I think the work can happen in both ways, but you're sort of taking on this role of being a listener, sounding out sound in a space. And then in a group, I feel there becomes more of this collective listening experience, at least the way that we did it. I mean, I think as we talked, there's multiple configurations we could have done. We could have made it more performative. We could have thought of it more from the side of like the spectator seeing this group walking through these arches performing. But we did it more from people joining together, walking together, and then each person kind of became a sound hub, because spatially as the sounds are arranged, the same sounds will not play exactly at the same time on everyone's speakers. So there was a nice, I found it very nice when we were walking very closely together under one of the arches, and it became this sort of like, it was also about just walking together. And I think Amanda could probably talk more about that, but that's a big part of your practice. But it was an awareness of other people's bodies and their positioning and how that affect the sound diffusion, and that directly created the soundscape. So, I mean, without the sounding element and the sort of archways as resonators, you had a sort of very different experience as to if you were listening just on headphones or as a singular person. And then the collaborative element, I mean, I think we brought, what I really like is we brought different sort of strengths to the table and different interests. And I think Amanda's had a bit more experience like walking with groups, working in participatory artistic practice, and also sort of curating those experiences well. And I just found both on the like the sound submission side, sort of what we each brought in, and the sort of range of sounds. And on the participatory side, I think I was a bit more attuned to sort of the specific, I don't know, sound experience within the architecture. That was maybe more of my initial interest. But I think we both working together sort of joined and became more attuned to those other aspects of the experience. And so, yeah, I always find it very interesting working with Amanda, and I learn a lot.
Great to hear. That's what collaborations are supposed to be feeling, hopefully. Well, yeah, thanks a lot for coming on to talk about this project, Jen. That's all we have time for today, unfortunately, but thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Before moving on to our next guest, we'll get a short taste of what Sounding Arches by Jen Grossman and Amanda Gutierrez sounds like. That short discussion, we also have the pleasure to have Lola Baraldi as part of the conversation, writer and multifaceted event planner and organizer around Montreal. Welcome to the show, Lola.
Hi, thank you.
Nice to have you on. So the two of you, Amanda and Lola, you've done a few sound walks together, from what I understand, reflecting upon gendered relations in the public space, and currently working towards the project Xeno Walk. Could you perhaps elaborate a bit on what that is?
Yeah, Amanda, you want to explain the project?
Yeah, the project is it's an AR project, augmented reality walk, that features five interviews with different artists, and most importantly with three collectives that are part of two in Montreal: Collage Feministes Montreal, Collage Feminicide Montreal, and Collage Feminicide Paris. And that's the connection, and that's the space where I met Lola. And we've been walking together, one to plan, one to also walking first as in the Mile End Skate Park, and the second walk to test once I geolocate the sounds. And originally, like previous to that, we walked together as part of the collective finding spaces. But yeah, I'm going to leave Lola because she has been a great collaborator in basically a link to the city, to myself, because I'm a newcomer in the city. But I think the connection with Lola has been feeding and has been very crucial to place myself with that community.
What's been interesting about this walk is, you know, Amanda and her initiative as an artist to kind of map a certain space with sound segments from these interviews that she's taken with different feminist collectives. I think initially she had thought up of different spaces herself and they were in a different part of town. And one day she called us and she said, we're going to rearrange this because this is a collaborative project. So we need to decide on the locations together. So that part has been a lot more fluid and experimental because we just met up in the first walk we did, we just met up and walked around the area around the Van Horn skate park and decided on potential locations together, reacting in real time to the dynamics of the space and to where the conversation was taking us, and to what we were individually responding to what our senses were responding to. And that part was truly collaborative and I would say improvised, really. And that is has given a location to all these different sound segments that we're still testing out and rearranging, but that's been quite exciting.
I'm curious to hear what lays behind defining the different areas for these different segments. Having done a bit of research or reading some on Amanda's blog and taking part of some of these notes of the reflections and thoughts that arose during these meetings that you've had, I'm curious to hear if it's if it's an act of empowerment in this case of reclaiming space for non-male individuals in an otherwise male-dominated public space, or what the intention behind the different locations or choices of the locations are connected to.
I think in terms of that, I mean, one part that's been quite interesting is as soon as we entered this kind of walking / scouting mindset in that area, it a very natural emergence of zones kind of occurred where we realized naturally we just fit the in different zones. You know, the skate park being one zone with its own dynamic and set of sounds, and near the Champs des Possibles being another zone with its own completely different dynamic and set of sounds, under the underpass, the bridge, with more muffled sounds and the cars passing, but also a lot more activist art in the underpass, lots of posters that are responding to whatever's going on politically at the moment. Honestly, it's like a news flash walking under that bridge. And then around the statue park, the Glen de Mesurier statue park as well, finishing the walk there. So all these zones kind of emerged as very obvious different spaces with their own sonic characteristics. I think for me, that was the empowering part. It wasn't necessarily navigating the identity of my gender in an active way, but more so having a discursive relationship with the space of how I experience it as a human being, as a woman, as a flaneuse, and as someone who loves seeing and hearing, you know, what's on the walls, what's around the walls in that area. I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, it was very fluid to just identify these spaces.
No, I think that was a great reflection upon what I was aiming for or curious about. Another thing that I pulled from the notes too, or that was, I think, a reflection during the time that perhaps you can shine some light upon as well, is perhaps that the time of day has a big impact on the experience too. Why is that? Or have you reflected a bit upon what kind of differences are at play during a day and nighttime walk in the same space, perhaps?
I mean, your senses are stimulated in a completely different way, right? And I think there's a there's a certain alertness that comes with nightfall, especially as a woman walking around the city. So that would be a certain difference. And I think what we respond to is different based on the amount of light of what we can see and what we can react to. Amanda mentioned at some point, you know, I think when we were under the underpass, that she felt a lot more comfortable and a lot more able to engage in dialogue and to take the time that dialogue took because she was with other people. And that was around nightfall when we started walking around there. So I think even in a more subconscious way, our senses are stimulated in a different way. And that affects, of course, our experience and our perspectives and what we respond to.
Definitely. And there's certainly more parameters at play, as you mentioned, walking in a group versus alone at nightfall or in daytime. So there's certainly more layers to that question and that answer or reflection as well. But so if one is curious to learn more about this project, if I understand it correctly, this will also be made publicly and in not too long. Am I right about that?
Yes, this will be launched in the third week of September as part of Pop Montreal. And it's also, thank you to many different people who have been collaborating. I think Lola has been a great, it has been showing me many, many ways of how this project can intersect with the city, and not only with the city, but also with people who live in there. So in fact, she invited many of her friends to go to the first AR test that we did. And that gave us a lot of light, which I think that is very important to connect dots. And I think also she mentioned Pop Montreal, you know, like being new in the city, sometimes it takes you years to understand where this kind of projects that have a very, very specific audience, but also a specific venue can actually take place and how they can live. And finally, Undefined FM radio, which is called Planet Earth, the project will be launched in September, and by the third week of September, that's what I can say right now, but it's going to selected four artists and also related to a space in sound. So, and I would be very happy to retake this notes, and also considering many of the previous conversations that we have with Lola. Yeah.
Well, that's great to hear. I'm glad to hear that this collaboration yields those different sort of opportunities for this project, particularly then. So for you listeners, have your eyes and ears open for Xeno Walk sometime soon in the future, available for you. Well, thanks, Lola, for coming on to talk to us this evening. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Lola. Talk to you soon.
I hope so. We got to walk.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lola. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you too. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. That is about everything that we have time with today, folks, for this first episode of this season of Pirate Block Radio. Today, you have listened to a conversation and sounds from Amanda Gutierrez. For this last section of the episode, we were joined by Jen Grossman, followed by Lola Baraldi. Speaking to you is me, your host, as always, Malte Leander. And as a usual reminder, you can head on over to Mixcloud, where you find all previous episodes of this show if you can't wait until next month. But otherwise, we'll be back on the same time and same slot here on CKUT 90.3 FM every first Thursday of the month. Until next time.
With the It Pays to Be Vaccinated contest, your COVID-19 vaccination could pay off big time.
Every Friday in August, you could win $150,000 and two scholarships of $10,000. Plus, if you've had both shots September 3rd, there's a draw for 16 scholarships of $20,000 and a jackpot of $1 million. Register now for the It Pays to Be Vaccinated contest at quebec.ca/vaccination contest. The sooner...
CKUT on the air, live for CKUT. Oh, what? CKUT,
vous écoutez Show pour le Monstone sur les ondes de CKUT 90.3 FM. Vous passerez cette première heure en ma compagnie, François Létourneau. Je vous ai préparé une petite sélection musicale et à 22h, je laisse la place à Nicolas Thérien pour la deuxième heure. On commence avec Topically Tropic plus Matthias Moonstruck Moose de l'album Drop It, The History of Unheard Music.